think the Mets have found something.
They were sexy last night.
Sexy is a good word. They this Nolan McLean is...
Man.
I mean, you want to talk about setting a tone. And you know what? A sweep by the Phillies as they pulled to win and, you know, another game closer to the division lead. You know, you want to talk about there's still a lot of time. You still think the Phillies might win the division. Whatever. Yes, all of that is true. What this kid did, though, and has done in his three starts is simply remarkable. And last night... You know, there's two different things that I love. Number one, he starts the game off by striking out Trey Turner on three straight pitches. And then you look at the eighth inning. And I'm not going to lie, when he finished the seventh, I'm like, are they going to let him pitch
the
eighth?
I thought they were going to pull him.
And I know the pitch count was low, but I mean, who the hell knows in this day and age? He comes out.
It looked like he started to dry up a little bit. And I was like, this is a good time to kind of say, all right, good job, kid. Let's save you. But they was like, no, let him go.
Fair enough. But he goes out there for the eighth. And, you know, you got first and third, nobody out. And I'm thinking, they're going to yank him. And again, they let him pitch through it. This is what you were talking about the other day. They let him fight through it, and he winds up, you know, you get the fly ball, you get the pop up, and then he's out of the inning. And it was really something cool to see, and the place was electric. And another one of those nights where they're not winning only because of the home run ball. They're stringing together base hits. You had the two out. I think the two out RBI single from Vientos was really good to see. And then he hits the home run.
That bomb.
Unbelievable. And all of a sudden, the feeling of this team, the baseball season's stupid. I mean, last week when they can't, you know, when they're losing two out of three to Washington, it's like, this team stinks.
Right.
Then they go and they win the first two games in Atlanta, but they can't quite finish the sweep. It's like, this team stinks. And then you see what they've done against the Phillies and that lineup, and they have just continued. I think it's 30-something, like 38 hits in three games against the Phillies. I mean, really, you can't explain it.
No, I think you made a good point about the eighth. I thought when Soto was able to get the ball home to keep it scoreless, and then and the same out to left field happened again, it was good to see the team say, nah, we talked about having that killer instinct. That was a great example of that right there.
Which was lacking.
Which was lacking. But to see it come together... and then obviously when he finished the eighth, to see everybody jumping around in the dugout, it was cool, right? Like it's good to see this team dialed in. Like, no, man, this is where we're going to charge the hill, if you will. So congratulations to the Mets.
Gary Cohen said, I think it was in maybe the sixth inning. I don't remember when I heard him say it, but he said, if he wins, which he did, he will be the first Met pitcher in the history of the franchise to win his first three starts.
Oh, wow.
That's incredible. When you think about, I mean, listen, I know the Mets have been around since 1910. I get that. But they've been around for a long time now, and they've had some pretty damn good pitchers. That, to me, was, I don't know, I was kind of shocked when I heard that. But, and see, you know what, CBS Sports Network just put the graphic up. That is exactly indeed the case. So he was right when he said that. The thing I like about watching him, so if you take it back to Sean Manaea and Kodai Senga, I love Manaea, but he's been tough getting going this year, as we know. And Senga just nibbles so much. And he throws a million pitches. This kid comes right after you, and he is, I think, I wrote it down because I wanted to make sure I had it proper. Out of Nolan McLean, here we go. Eight innings, four hits, six strikeouts. How about this number? 95 pitches, three eight innings. 71 strikes.
Oof.
This guy is throwing not on every batter, I get that, but on almost every batter, he is throwing strike one. He's ahead 0-2, 1-2, and he's in command of every at bat, and he is so good within the strike zone. Now, you compare that to some of the other pitchers we've watched, that feels like a tooth extraction. I mean, he is a pleasure to watch. And that game moved along beautifully. He doesn't waste much time. And
well, I thought you as you started off, I thought you hit it right on the hand. It's how he started the game. He just went right at him. It wasn't no warm up, figure it out. Let me kind of ease my way through this. I thought his command was on from the jump, and I thought it set the tone for the rest of the game.
No question. And now you think, you know, big picture, as we get closer and closer to September now, you start to think about Nolan McLean. Now, I don't know that this continues. I don't know that it doesn't. You know, these three games he's pitched, he's seeing new lineups. They're seeing him for the first time. So I don't know, you know, how long this run goes. But he's highly thought of. He dominated in the minor leagues. And so far in three games in the majors, he has looked the part and then some. You know, you think about Tong starting now tomorrow night against the Marlins. You think about Sproat probably on the way. And all of a sudden, and we talked about this yesterday, thinking about this game last night, you start to look at this Met pitching rotation in a much different way and this team, because all of a sudden, I don't care whether it's football, basketball, baseball, there is a renewed energy about this team because of what is coming up the pike.
Right, I agree. But I also think one of the positives, as we talked about, is the fact that we were able to get through six. And one of our guys looked strong and in command. And I think it just adds more oomph to the bullpen. Like, hey, man, we can do this, right? This is on us. And we'll see what happens. Like, Tong's up. And hopefully this isn't – I know I've been a little redundant here, but hopefully this is the momentum we've been talking about. Like, this is the surge that we need, especially as we roll into September.
Well, and a big part of that, too, as we move from the pitching to the lineup – are the quality at bats they're having. And Mark Vientos, while, you know, maybe wasn't part of building that lead, but tacked on. I mentioned the two-out single. You know, think about what we've complained about with the Mets all season long, and that is hitting with runners in scoring position, getting the big two-out hit. You know, I came in here, I think it was with you, or maybe it was with G, whatever. That was you with you on Monday.
Yeah.
Or even Sunday when I did the solo show. You know, I watched the Red Sox on Saturday put great at-bat after great at-bat against the Yankees, and they had a lot of two-out hits, a lot of, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position, moving runners over, doing the little things to make sure they scored runs in different ways. And again, it is only a few days, and I get that. But all of a sudden, this team seems like, as you say, the momentum, it seems like they're starting to click on all cylinders. Aside from Ryan Helsley, who was pretty awful the other night, you are starting to get decent starting pitching last night, incredible starting pitching, but the quality of the at-bats to me, you know, you look at where they strung together those hits the other night to win the game in the ninth inning, four straight hits off of Duran, which was fun to see. Then the bottom of the third last night, you got this kid, he's putting up zeros, inning one, inning two, inning three, and then all of a sudden here comes, I think it was Beatty that doubled. You had the, excuse me, bunts. I don't know what Senga was doing, if it was supposed to be a sacrifice or whatever, but he gets the bunt single. And then all of a sudden you get, you know, Lindor comes up with a base hit. Soto comes up with a base
hit. Nemo
had it. Alonso. Yeah, like it was all of a sudden everything you wanted to see. And it's like, this is what we've been looking for all year.
Yeah, I think it's great, man, because I'm falling in love. I can't believe I'm saying this that long. I'm really falling in love with Vientos, man. For him to have that RBI single and then come back around with that two-run bomb, I'm like, man, this is, and it's so interesting because we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier. If Lindor and Alonso and Soto aren't doing their job, they fall flat and they look flat. But when you see all hands on deck and they're responding and they're producing, man, they're starting to look like must-watch TV. And I thought last night was a great example. And so when you, like, to your point, when you have the bats performing at that level where they're kind of matching what McClain was able to do last night, that's when you say, okay, we got something here. Now, how can this carry on?
And I've got to think, too, inside that clubhouse, when you see a kid go out there and pitch the way he's pitching, you know, I also would think that kind of creates some more energy for the team itself as well. And then when he goes out there and starts the way he did, you know, I know it's not easy. And it's Taijuan Walker, who, I mean, at this point in his career is not exactly a dominant starter. But I've got to think they were, like, you know, foaming at the mouth last night to get started and kind of continue this momentum, as you like to call it.
Yeah, it's so funny you talk about the crazies, the Mets crazies. When they started panning the crowd, we saw Elmo and Oscar, and then you saw the microphone thing.
It's wild. I know it's all over the place.
I saw that, and I was like, this is a little getting out of it. It's getting crazy. Yep. Some dude had Tupperware. He brought the
I saw that with a hanger to make it the microphone.
But it was great because this is what sports is about, right? And then when you have the performance they had last night, you're like, all right. This is why you dial in this time of year, especially when the team is trying to make a run. So I enjoyed the game last night. It was fun. And I just, you know, hopefully it's something they can tack on.
It is crazy, though. Well, again, it doesn't matter what the sport is. It's amazing how a season can have ebbs and flows like it does. It could be a football team that starts, you know, the Bengals last year started, whatever it was, 1-3, or they started horribly.
0-3.
Was it 0-3?
Yeah, it was 0-3.
And then they're fighting at the end to try to make the playoffs when they couldn't get out of their own way early. You kind of knew they had it in them. The Mets, while I'm not saying they started, you know, 10-30 or anything like that, but they had that swoon in June, or even much of May, too. May, June, and July were really awful. And parts of August haven't been great. But yet, here we go, as we hit September, and this is really the stretch run. If, in fact, they can, and I don't expect them to win, you know, 13 games in a row. I mean, it'd be nice, but, you know, if all of a sudden they keep winning series after series after series, You know, the word you use is momentum. You know, that's day-to-day. If they can string together series wins, you've got a team that, while looked fantastic in April, looked dead in the water in July, all of a sudden, with that lineup, with the renewed life in the rotation and the length you think you might get from the starters, you know, if in fact that does indeed continue, you can make every case again that this team could go challenge and go deep in the playoffs.
That's where we're at with the Hells Bells. You never want to hear that again. And look, I like Ryan Helsley. I love the acquisition. I thought it was going to be a great move for the Mets. I even gave him, like, BT and I were arguing about this a couple weeks ago. He's like, oh, Helsley's toast, whatever. And I'm like, dude, it's been six outings, whatever it was. And now, obviously, I mean, you look at the numbers. He's given up, what, 12 runs or something, 11 outings? It's been ridiculous. You can't be worse than Helsley's been. Doesn't mean he'll never figure it out. We went through this with Devin Williams, although I think this is a lot worse. My issue is that the guy throws 101 miles an hour. He's not getting it by anybody. So you could throw it as hard as you want. When you throw it as straight as an arrow like he does, clearly it can be hit or at the very least fouled off to a point where you try to throw a secondary pitch and then he can't throw that for a strike. That's a major issue. And now, whatever shred of confidence Helsley had left, it's gone. And we're not in the business of repatching or repairing the fragile psyche of a player. Not with 30 games to go, you're not. And the Mets can talk about all they want. They don't have that luxury. Season's almost over here. You're fighting for a playoff spot. You're fighting for the division. You can't be worried about Ryan Helsley. Unfortunately, he's not getting the job done. Tell me a situation that the Mets should feel comfortable pitching Ryan Helsley in from now on with 30 games to go. He's in the Montas Club. I don't want to see him. At least with Helsley, you feel like maybe there's potential he could get a turnaround, but he just had a clean inning two nights ago, and then you have him go out there last night and do that. Like, I think he might be able to be useful at some point over this final 30-game stretch. The idea of ever trusting him in a big spot again, I just don't think you can. I think it's over. The BT and Sal Show on the Fan is presented by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of these New York Mets that we're talking about here. Hey, but they have won two straight against the Phils, working their way back into the division, and everybody's excited. Looking to go out there tonight, see if they can finish the job and get the sweep done. We are here live at the Salt Shack on Long Island, hanging out with Surfside for the day. Come by and say hello. Jerry Recco on his way here after he just did the morning show with Willie. Fun day in store for you. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the phones here on the Mets. Owen is calling from Connecticut. What's up, Owen?
What's going on, Sal? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it. What's up?
Just chatting about the Mets bullpen here. Obviously, you know, talk about Helsley's just not feeling it. He's just not it right now. I'm kind of getting the vibes with, you know, how David Peterson saved that game against the Brewers last year. What do you think about Tyler McGill coming back and taking that eighth inning role?
Yeah, I don't love that idea. It's not a bad one, Owen, and thank you for the call. I mean, look, the Mets are going to have to get creative here. So boil it down to exactly what Stern said, and that's why I've been calling for them to call up, you know, dating back to before McClain came up, McClain, Sproat, Tong. I mean, this is going on for weeks. We've been saying the same thing. And I am not like everybody else because, you know, Yankee fans, oh, Spencer Jones. You know, Met fans, whether it's last year, oh, Vientos or Alvarez, like everybody, Beatty, bring all these guys up. Bring them all up now. I am the exact opposite of that. So when I'm asking for them to call up somebody, it's with good reason, not just because I want to see the new shiny toy that we know nothing about from the minor league system. There was reason to want to see Sproat, McClain, Tong. Twofold. Number one, because those guys, especially McClain and Tong, who are the first two up here, Sproat's still not here, those two guys have earned a look, combined with the fact that the Mets need it. It's an area of need. Like, they got to a point where it was just desperation. Hey, I understand that it may be too soon to call up Tom. There's a risk that you're taking there. It's a risk the Mets have to take. I'd rather take that risk based off of his dominance and their need and have him fall flat on his face than not have him come up here at all. You cannot sit on that type of weapon. Same thing with McClain. They pushed it, finally bring him up. Look what he's done to the rotation in just two starts. Doesn't mean it's going to continue. It means that they had no choice but to go to these guys. It's not just for me, one size fits all. Bring him up. I think a lot of people do that. I'm not one of them. This was a unique circumstance. You just felt that the time was right. They needed it. The players performed as such. They're desperate. give it a shot. And they're now doing that. Now, with that being said, back to your Tyler McGill point, I am not a fan of Tyler McGill. I would not trust him in a big spot ever. You want to tell me he could be a useful piece at some point down the stretch? Maybe. I'm looking to have the best pitchers on the roster, period. Worry about how you use them after you assemble the best pitchers on the roster. Does Tyler McGill really fit one of those roles? I know Montas wouldn't. He's on there, obviously, because of the money or whatever that he's making. Fine. That's why the Mets keeping him. Otherwise, you cut him. Stanek, Reed Garrett got hurt, so obviously he could go on the IL, and you could avoid having to send him down, whatever it may be. I'm looking to get the best arms on this roster and then figure out how to use them. Maybe McGill can work himself into that conversation. For me, I'd rather go to Sproat before I would go to Tyler McGill. I'd rather use Tong in a high-leverage situation out of the bullpen, although maybe he's going to take over as a main piece in this rotation. We'll see what happens on Friday night. Rob is in Oyster Bay. What's up, Rob?
How's it going, man?
Good, Rob. How are you?
Good, man. See what happens when the Mets play good baseball? You buy tickets. I bought tickets for tonight. I'm about to see Cowboy Ohtani. But you hit it on the head, the bullpen, bro. Ryan Helsley, man, that was a great acquisition, like you said, but he just doesn't have it. Doesn't have the swing and miss stuff. I do like Tyler McGill in the eighth inning or even in the bullpen because I like Brandon Sproul in the rotation when he comes up. But I don't know. I don't know how you feel about Sproul coming out of the pen. But, yeah, they need to figure it out and get creative, like you said.
Well, they move. So, yeah, thanks for the call, Rob. Enjoy the game tonight. Yeah, fans are excited. That's what I was saying before. I have a hard time. How come I was fighting so many of y'all for 3 weeks here? Team is wretched. Team stinks. This team's awful. They're going nowhere. And now all of a sudden two measly wins against the Phillies while also showing significant flaws in those two wins. And everybody's back. Like, you're ignoring the same things that you were calling up ripping the team about just because they won these games. It's not always about the result. It's not about the result. As somebody who's maintained the even keel for the most part with the Mets, you have to acknowledge that the closer we get to the end of the season, the bigger their flaws become, especially when you talk about a potential ace and an eighth inning guy. Those are two of the most important reasons that you would have success in the postseason. Their ace is Sean Manaea. He can't go more than four innings. That's a major freaking problem. Their eighth inning weapon, Helsley, was their biggest trade deadline acquisition. He's been a total bust. Like, we're talking Billy Taylor territory. Look him up for you youngins. Look up Billy Taylor. You remember him off, Billy Taylor?
No.
Okay, they traded for Billy Taylor. He was a great closer with the A's. He came to the Mets, what was that, 98, 99, something like that? He was awful. Maybe it was even 2000. I forget. Nah, maybe it was 99. Anyway, point is, look him up. He was awful. And he was supposed to be great. I mean, Helsley was their prized acquisition at the trade deadline. Not Cedric Mullins. Yeah, Tyler Rogers is good. Helsley was the move. Luckily for them that they still have some options. Soto, Rayleigh. Like right now, I always would go by, if you go to the bullpen, I would go a triangle of trust you'd want. The way that bullpens have evolved and the way that starters don't go deep anymore, forget the Mets specifically for a second, you have to go more than the triangle of trust and you kind of go to a square. The Mets then, at the deadline, went and built themselves a bullpen where they had five guys that you could trust. Diaz, Rogers, Rayleigh, Soto, and Helsley. Well, now it's down to four, which is still serviceable. If you get five or six innings from your starting pitchers. That's a big if. Soto, Rayleigh, Diaz, Rogers. That's it. Tell me the other arm you trust out of there. Could it be Sproat? I don't know. Sproat's one outing out of the bullpen this year in the minor leagues didn't go very well. Now, does that translate? I have no idea what that means. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. It's worth a look, and maybe Tyler McGill will be worth a look. Here's the problem. There's no margin for error here. Whether you talk about the division, whether you talk about a playoff spot, like this is not a time to be evaluating and learning about guys. You're just going to throw Tyler McGill to the fire in the eighth inning? With a one-run lead? Not me. I'm not. It's the square of trust for me. That's it. Square of trust or bust. Diaz, Rogers, Rayleigh, Soto. Not Stanek. Not Garrett if he were healthy. That's it. Now, maybe Tong or Sproul could earn their way in there. Again, I don't know how they're going to use Tong. Obviously, he's going to start on Friday. Maybe he's a mainstay there starting. Maybe they figure they could use him out of the pen eventually. But for now, there's only four guys that I would trust. Back to your calls in a little bit. 888-808-1019.
The Mets have just announced that they are calling up 22-year-old super prospect Jonah Tong, a former seventh-round pick from the 2022 draft, who has shot up the prospect rankings list. He has shot up in regards to how the Mets viewed him, how Major League Baseball viewed him as a pitching prospect. I gave you the numbers before the break. If you're just tuning in, he pitched away 1.59 ERA at AA, was promoted to AAA a few weeks ago, didn't allow a run in 11 and two-thirds innings. I've heard comparisons to Tim Lincecum to describe his windup, the velocity. You know, let's see him. I still have seen only highlights of him. But the Mets have called up Jonah Tong. Now, there are three ways they can use him, and I have been told that we now know how they're going to use him, which Sean knows. I don't know it yet. He'll reveal it after, but let me give you the three options and what I would do, and then you will tell us what the Mets are going to do with Let Me See That Tong. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Number one, they could use him as a weapon out of the bullpen. We have seen teams do this before. We saw the Yankees do it many years ago with young Jabba Chamberlain, even with Phil Hughes. The Rangers do it with Neftali Feliz. The Cardinals do it with Adam Wainwright. Bad memories.
Yep.
So they could use him as a big-time arm out of the bullpen. Option number two is they could look at some of their starters that struggled to go five innings and say, Jonah, you're going to follow up a guy after four innings. A piggyback. And then the third option, which is what I would choose, is you take a guy who's made basically nothing but starts in the minor leagues and say you're a starter. And we're going to give you the opportunity to be Nolan McClain. We're going to give you the opportunity to grab a rotation spot. That's what I would do. What are the New York Mets' plans for Jonah? Let me see that Tong.
Joel Sherman reporting Tong is being called up as a starter.
How about that? So my assumption would be he will start sometime later this week, possibly Sunday, for Senga's turn where he can be pushed back a day. But I wouldn't do that. I would actually start him before that because Clay Holmes and David Peterson could also use an extra day of rest. Now, Nolan McClain is scheduled to pitch Wednesday. What day are we up to? Today's Tuesday. So tonight is Manaea. Wednesday is McClain.
Yeah.
Thursday is then scheduled to be Clay Holmes. So I would start him if it was up to me Thursday. That's what I would do. I think the last time Tong pitched was, because that's a part of it too. I could tell you that now. I think it was within 5 days. But let me double check. So his last start he made was on August 23rd. So if we're playing his days, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. His day, if it's on a fifth day, would be Thursday. If they want to give him an extra day of rest, then it would be Friday.
Okay, so do you think this is a matter of just, we've seen the innings here, we've seen Holmes, we've seen Senga, and this is about formulating the perfect six-man rotation?
Well, I thought they were always going to go to a six-man, Sean. In fact, I was surprised they didn't do it earlier this week because I was very surprised that Kodai Senga made his start on regular rest. So it is not a surprise at all that the Mets are going to a six-man. I just thought it was going to happen earlier.
Okay, but that's what you think is happening. We're not going to get a surprise, hey, let's send Senga, use one of those three options, send him down for a couple weeks.
Excuse me?
Dude, the guy's not getting
hear you. What'd you say?
You heard me.
No, I didn't. Oh, Rosie was just informing me that we are about to hear from the manager of the New York Mets, Carlos Mendoza.
Oh, let's hear from that because my point might be invalid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Carlos Mendoza on the impending call-up of Jonah Tong.
Carlos, have you guys decided to go with Tong?
Yes. Yeah. That'll be on Friday.
On Friday?
Yes.
What led you guys to make that decision after such little time for him in the minors or in AAA?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about him dominating the minor leagues. You know, you can make a case, all right, he's AA, you want to give him a better look at the AAA level. But, man, you know, a couple of outings and, you know, I think it's hard to keep him there, you know. So here he is now. You know, we knew we were going to need a sixth starter and he put himself in the conversation and here he is now. I'm going to get an opportunity for us.
How about that?
I'm jealous.
So we have the answer Friday night at Citi Field. Did you hear that sound? That's me delisting my Mets tickets to make sure I go to that game.
I assume now you're going to come in and you're going to work Tong Day.
Am I going to work Tong Day?
Yeah, you were all Friday.
I can't really work Tong Day.
Why not?
Because you really want to break this down for you?
Yeah, yeah.
So Thursday night, me and my wife are celebrating our anniversary.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we're gonna have fun.
You're gonna be that sore by Friday?
Hold on a second, jeez.
Two o'clock Friday.
I'm just saying we have romantic plans. And I mean, whip out the jumbo package. I mean, the restaurant. I mean, maybe a Met game. You know, lots of
maybe a Met game. How romantic?
No. In all seriousness, okay. I love the Mets. I love going to Met games. That's obvious. Uh-huh. You know what my wife loves? Besides being with me,
club seats.
Bingo.
Yeah. Well, that's the way to get any wife to a game.
There are certain seats at Citi Field that she just loves. And so, while I don't necessarily want to spend the money, it's like, well, there's a good trade-off.
It beats jewelry.
It beats jewelry.
Yeah.
It's more expensive than jewelry.
Who cares? You get something out of it.
No. And look, an anniversary is for everybody, right?
Yeah.
That's actually a perfect anniversary gift because it's not like it's her birthday and I'm dragging her to a Met game.
Yeah.
It's an anniversary. But we were going to celebrate that Thursday. And then Friday, maybe I'll take someone else. Maybe I'll take one of my sons. Maybe I'll take Jet. To see Jonathan.
That's a good father-son moment.
But I'm serious. Like, I don't know if I was ever planning on going Friday, but I'm that excited to see this kid pitch. And you just said you're jealous.
I am.
Cam Schlittler looks legit.
He does.
You have something going on right now at the major league level.
You're missing the point.
Go ahead.
We just heard Carlos Mendoza, and he said something that should seem so obvious to organizations. Oh, you're doing this already? He's dominating the minor leagues.
He made it impossible to not do it.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
He made it impossible not to do it. And yet, while not being a pitcher, we were extremely frustrated as Yankee fans. The moment Judge got hurt in the midst of Spencer Jones tearing up the minor leagues, we couldn't even get a little taste. We couldn't get a lick of the Spencer Jones lollipop a month ago.
But I think, and I do want to equate that because I heard that about I thought that when Mendy said it because I remember saying to you guys, or saying to Brian Cashman, isn't Spencer Jones making it too difficult to not call him up? I think there are two differences that need to be addressed.
All right.
Number one, maybe the Yankees don't believe in Spencer Jones. Maybe just because a guy is tearing it up at AA, they saw through it. And spoiler alert, he stopped hitting.
Yeah. He got banged up right around that time.
And what happened?
Back. Yeah. He took a little while to get back.
Have you checked his numbers since?
He had a couple games with a couple big home runs.
No. I understand. Like, yeah. I'm not saying it's been a complete zero, right. But he cooled off dramatically. So it's possible. I'm giving you two options.
Okay.
Number one, the Yankees saw through it. And number two, they didn't look at it as a need. When you look at the Mets and you look at their rotation, even though there isn't necessarily a vacancy, they were going to add a sixth guy, and they've also seen the impact that young Nolan McLean has already made.
Definitely.
This is clearly something that can enhance a part of their team that has not been great.
So I completely agree, and that should be first and foremost. And this is more about the Mets than the Yankees in this, but it also does two things. When you're a team that hasn't played your best baseball all year and continue to struggle, and every time you think you're about to get hot, you win a game and it doesn't matter, the infusion of young players, I think, does more than just address a need in the rotation. I think it can energize a room, and I think McLean has energized that to a certain point. Now you do that with Jonah Tong. I was making the point with Spencer Jones where, okay, maybe they didn't feel it as a need, but how about just putting something new into the pot and waking the team up? And I think that this is another move for the Mets where I think it does both things. Helps their rotation and just more young enthusiasm on this team.
Yeah, no, it's very
exciting. I'm excited for you. This is great.
Yeah, anytime there's a young prospect that you hear about and then you see the numbers just jump off the page, because a lot of us haven't watched him pitch. Even though there are ways to watch guys nowadays that didn't exist 10, 15
MLB
years ago.
TV, man.
I know.
I've seen way too many Somerset games than I care to admit.
No, I know. There is still something really exciting about seeing a top prospect, and maybe I'm an old kind of soul when I say this, a pitching prospect. Like,
yeah.
We live in a day and age in baseball in which the top line ace barely exists. Like, we don't see that guy anymore. And the Mets have called up a kid in Nolan McLean, who in his major league debut pitches into the sixth inning. Okay, whatever, zero runs. Then he throws seven innings in his second major league start. Something guys don't do anymore. And now we get to see Jonah Tong in a few more days.
That's great.
It reminds me of 2015 a little bit. Was that something you were about to say, Rosen?
Yeah, just or even before that.
You should host a show.
A little like Harvey, Syndergaard, DeGrom, just a little bit of that.
But you know what the difference is? And Pulsifer, Isringhausen, and Wilson, for those that are older, here's the difference. When Pulsifer and Wilson and Izzy were called up, they needed to be heroes and change everything about the Mets. When Wheeler and Harvey, and DeGrom was not a highly regarded prospect, so I won't even include him in this. But when Harvey and Wheeler made their debuts, the Mets stunk.
The other guy with that was Syndergaard, by the way.
Now, Syndergaard fits this because, remember, Syndergaard got called up, as with Steven Matz, while the Mets were good.
Yep.
That's the difference. Like, the Mets are good. The Mets are in a playoff spot. Like, they're battling here. They went to the NLCS last year. So they're not being called up to be saviors. They're being called up to enhance the current roster. And it puts the pressure on everyone else in this rotation. Like, here's the deal, Sean Manaea. You're pitching tonight, bro. Yeah, I like you, Sean. We all do. Thanks. You're a good guy. You're a class guy.
Thanks.
I'm not talking. Oh, you?
You said Sean.
Sean Manaea.
Oh.
I mean, you're okay, too. But here's the bottom line, Sean. Sorry, I'm talking to Manaea.
This is so weird. Just call him Manaea. You're freaking me out.
I'm respectful.
All right.
Call him by his first name. Acknowledge me. Yeah. Here's the thing, Sean. Manaea, you better pitch well, bro. You ain't guaranteed anything. I don't care how much money you make. Same thing with Kodai Senga. Like, there are kids coming, and they're coming hard. And if you don't perform, you're going to lose a spot in the rotation. Like, it's as simple as that. And so I do like the fact that Manaea and Senga, and to a degree, Clay Holmes, who had a good last start, you're not guaranteed anything. And Nolan McLain has already grabbed the rotation spot. That discussion's over. I know it's only two starts in, but he has certainly shown you enough. And we're going to see what Jonah Tong does Friday when he makes his major league debut at Citi Field against the Marlins.
We begin, as we have seemingly all summer, on the baseball front. And who let the Mets out? Who?
Let me say this. This sweep at Citi Field, for me, and I think I speak for all Met fans, was the most satisfying series win of the season, because not only what it means, obviously, in the race for the NL East, not only what it means for creating separation from the Reds, and now they got swept first time all year, the Reds got swept in LA against the Dodgers. When the Phillies, and it's tough for the city of Philadelphia to stoop to the low that they stoop to, because they're already, you know, scum of the earth, you know, bottom of the barrel. But when Alec Boehm cried like a little baby about some microphone, and oh, it's in the line of sight, I can't see, and he acted like a wuss, for the Mets to put it on them this week and sweep them, and quite frankly, it wasn't even close, was so satisfying as a Met fan. To stick it to those crybaby Phillies and their fans and their players. Oh, we can't win at Citi Field, so we have to cry about a microphone. This is why you love sports, Sean. It was great. And I think really the entire city banded together, because we don't agree on much, Sean, when it comes to the Mets and Yankees. Sure. But one thing I think we do agree on is screw Philly.
Yeah. Foo Philly, as they like to say. I'm completely with you. Now, look, there's a couple different avenues we're going to take on your calls at 888-808-1019. So I'll just kind of bullet point them and then we'll go through them.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the emergence of Nolan McLain. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it is Vientos time of the year that we will get to. But let's just keep it right here for the Philly point of view right now. What happened this week, and what happened last night, and really a couple nights ago with the whole microphone thing and the glare, that I think is true now, that is going to become the Met rallying cry and gimmick as long as this continues.
Well, you've seen, and good job by Met fans. And I don't know where you find one of these.
The parabolic, yeah.
People have brought this now to Citi Field, yeah. Which, like, it's one thing, like, if something grows over time and you buy the Grimace outfit, you know, 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
There were people with the microphone. Would you have one of those sitting around your apartment that you were able to bring to Citi Field the next day? Great job by Met fans.
Great job by Met fans. And look, you needed something organic to happen. That has happened, and the Mets beat the heck out of the Philadelphia Phillies. But I think above anything else, I was proud to be a New Yorker, even as a non-Met fan, who many people think I hate the Mets for this reason. We have lived through the building of new stadiums and new arenas over what, the last 15, 20 years? It's probably been longer than that. Think about the excitement in that surge we had. It started with the Prudential Center. Madison Square Garden got redone. Obviously, the Barclays, insert joke there, Tommy Fine. Citi Field and Yankee Stadium opening on that same year, and then the Yankees going and winning a World Series right away, right? And then, of course, MetLife Stadium, the big bland toaster oven in the swamp. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those stadiums at times have come to life. I have never been a believer in the idea of, oh, you know, it's not the same as it used to be. I think if you're truly good and truly great, any one of those stadiums will rock. I was at MetLife Stadium, the only playoff game it hosted with the New York Giants. It shook when Hakeem Nicks ran. 2009, that Yankee Stadium, the new Yankee Stadium, came alive. We saw the Mets run to the World Series about 10 years ago. It came to life. But what these new stadiums and new arenas had been lacking that I really do not believe existed is a rival of a team that we all hate coming in and it being a house of horrors that is mentally taxing on them. And Citi Field, congratulations, front of the line of all of the new buildings that have opened here in the last 15, 20 years. What has happened now with those Philadelphia Phillies and these New York Mets has not happened in any of these buildings since they opened. And that is, you have a team that wets itself and is legitimately scared to play here. The Phillies walk into Citi Field and they mentally shrink. It is now in their head.
Yep.
And Mets fans have to own it. And we have taken a piece of pride back in this city. When you hear about, you never want to go play there, you never want to go play here, in whatever the sport can be, the Phillies cannot function as a franchise when they step foot in Citi Field, and that can pay dividends later on in a playoff series.
No, absolutely. I mean, Citi Field is electric. The crowds have been unbelievable this year, even through the ups and the downs, and I think that's a credit to the fans. I know they were publicly shamed by the owner, but I think that even if Steve Cohen didn't make those comments before the year, I think Met fans were going to be excited. They were going to show up. They were going to pack the place because of last year, because of Juan Soto, etc. They have been there. They have been loud. And you're right. The Phillies are a team that is mentally broken when they step foot in Citi Field. Now, number one, the Mets are better than the Phillies. Let's just call it like it is. I don't care what the records are. I don't care that the Phillies are ahead for now of the Mets in the standings.
Especially with Wheeler out.
But the Mets are just a better fundamentally team. I mean, the Phillies make the Yankees look like a crisp baseball team when it comes to defense. I mean, the Phillies' defense is absolutely horrific, embarrassing on every level. And you're right. They had to resort to, like I said, Philly is known for going low, and they just love to go low. For them to cry about a microphone is about as low, even for their standards, was pathetic. And they got karma rammed up there. You know what? When the Mets took it to them, because those sight lines, removing the microphone and having us to sit there for 25 minutes while they did that, did absolutely squat douche for the Phillies. And the Mets put up, you know, 500 runs against them. So you're right. The Phillies are completely broken mentally. They're shot when it comes to facing the Mets at Citi Field. Yeah. And I think, like you said, it has a lot to do with that home field advantage that the Mets have created there, which is just an amazing thing to see.
Yeah. So the next time the Phillies do come to Citi Field, and if that is a playoff series, the Phillies now see ghosts when they walk in that building. Hmm. They see ghosts, they lose confidence, they lose their swagger, and that's enormous. Now, fast forwarding, what does that mean? Now what? Right? We've played the now what game with all of our teams for a long time, ever since Robert Saleh stated those words, the now what, in training camp 2 years ago. Now what for the New York Mets and the Philadelphia Phillies? Look, the NL East felt over a week ago, and this is where a lot of us, and I'm guilty of this, Tommy's guilty of it, Sal's guilty of it, Evan's guilty of it. We come on, and we do a show each and every day for 162 games of baseball. And look, how do you not overreact? It's the nature of the ups and downs of a long baseball season. But it's not now an overreaction to say the Mets are alive for the division. They are. There's no way around it.
They're alive.
The Phillies have lost their ace. They are now just four games up, and when they see the Mets and they scoreboard watch, it is in their head. And the Phillies have a schedule ahead that includes a trip to L.A. to face the Dodgers, includes, of course, a trip to Milwaukee coming up at the beginning of next week, a good team in the Brewers. The Mets will visit Citizens Bank at the beginning of September as well. These are all extremely losable games for the Philadelphia Phillies, and the Mets, having found something here with Vientos waking up, and of course maybe an ace has emerged in Nolan McClain, the Mets have the Phillies, dare we say, right where they want them. And we do a lot of talk about who could be the hottest team when it matters most late. The Mets have shown a lot with their lack of runners in scoring position, the lack of wins after eight innings, the lack of trust in Ryan Helsley, that big pickup. They've given us a lot of reasons not to believe. But maybe, just maybe, the emergence of that bat like Vientos and the emergence of this young kid in McLean, and let's see what Jonah Tong has now, is enough extra juice and energy to take a season where a lot felt like it was going wrong even while they were winning with the Mets and turn it into all that is right while the Phillies are doing the thing the Met teams, the same old Mets, would have done in absolutely crumbling.
I'll push back on a couple things there. The first thing I'm going to push back on is positive Tommy never overreacts, never throws in the towel. You could speak for Evan, you could speak for Sal. I always bang the drum of positivity. What I will give you is that at one point, maybe a week or so ago, I recognized that the Reds were more of the clear and present danger, so they were more of the focus, and I allowed the NL East to play out because I always think you shoot for the stars, but when the Mets were only up on a game and a half on Cincinnati, I think it was more important to focus on them. Now that they've created some separation between them and themselves and the Reds, and they've gotten closer to the Phillies, now the focus shifts back, to your point, to the NL East. Let me say this, because you mentioned Nolan McLean, who has gotten off to, I'm not making this up, a better start to his Met career than Tom Seaver. This is a Met, he has gotten off to a better start to his Met career than Tom Seaver.
In a three-game sample size.
Okay. Seaver, Doc Gooden, Jacob DeGrom, on and on and on. The Mets are known for their pitching. I don't care what decade you talk about. This is a franchise that has a rich history of great pitching. Nolan McLean has had a better start to his career, big league career, than any of those players I just mentioned. So you could take that for however you want
to
take it.
Back that up?
Yeah, they put it on the on this thing last night. What's it, a .89 ERA? Seaver was like 1.89, something like that. I'm paraphrasing. But he has a better ERA through three starts than Doc, than Jake, than Seaver. He has not only been unbelievable, the poise, the stuff. And these are starts in Atlanta where the Mets normally don't play well. This is against the Phillies, and I understand they own the Phillies, but still, that's a big start. His family there in Seattle. And remember, the first start of his career was off the Friday where they blew another game, and things were just... Now, since then, they're, 8-3 in their last 11? Yeah. But all of his starts have been big time, and he has answered the bell. That says a lot about him. He is pitching like an ace. Even though it's only three starts, he already looks like an ace of a staff.
And that was something that definitely held back any belief of the Mets. Even if you were positive, Tommy, or anybody that was extremely, extremely positive, while we were frustrated with the bats and the runners in scoring position, we still knew deep down, and we still know deep down, that's a lineup with Juan Soto, Francisco Lindor, Pete Alonso, that, you know, that's a third of your lineup before you even get to the other guys, that ultimately you're still going to trust in October moments to come through. But what always held me back from this Met team, and I still have major questions about the bullpen, don't get me wrong, was the pitching and this idea of a pitching lab. And look, Kodai Senga, if he's not hurt, he's not going deep into games. David Peterson had been that guy that you would rely on. And beyond that, you might have saw the best last year from Sean Manaea. Okay, to be determined now still on the rest of what's going on. But if you get a young arm like Nolan McLean coming up doing what he's doing, and you see some of the young great arms in Major League Baseball, I'm not telling you he's Tyreek Skubal. I'm not telling you he's Paul Skeens. But I don't think it's a fluke what you saw for those three starts. And who cares if he doesn't have the longevity? I think he is already emerging as the stopper of bloodshed for this Met team and a guy that I think you got to ride it out here the rest of September and October. And this really could be the ace in the making for the Mets.
Thank God Evan is not here because I'm about to say something that I'm not sure is 100% factually correct, but just go with me here. The last time the Mets had a young pitcher named Nolan, they won a World Series.
Oh, God.
Don't fact check that. Let's just go with that. Let's just dream that.
Can we focus on what?
I'm totally focused.
Can we focus on whether they can win the division or not before we mention World Series? Like, can we at least have that same conversation?
Oh, hold on a second. I'm literally sitting within 3 feet, maybe 4 feet, probably too close, to a guy that loves and lives for these kind of tie-ins. I thought, I've been sitting on that one for a week or so. I thought, and I was waiting till we did a show. I know it's the Mets, but I thought you would love that. You love the tie-in. You do it all the time with the Rangers. You love to do it with the, Giants.
Yet.
How does it not fit?
It doesn't.
The last time they had a young pitcher named Nolan, they won a World Series.
They had to have had another young pitcher named Nolan at some point.
I don't think so. Now, based on my research, my extensive research, I don't recall another young pitcher named Nolan on the Mets.
All right. Well, the last time somebody with the last name of McLean was a star for a team in town, the Devils won the Cup. So you have that, too.
That was your tie-in?
John McLean.
Got it.
How about that? Sounds like you made that up.
No, I did not. 888-808-1019. All right, Met fans, what is the biggest key to the turnaround? Is it Nolan McLean? Is it Mark Vientos? And has Citi Field officially become a house of horrors for a rival in the first of all these semi-new buildings at this point to do so? The Mets are back.
We kick off the 1 o'clock hour, a little bit of a reset. Mets and Yankees both coming off decisive, but decisive victories nonetheless on Wednesday. Yankees, obviously, with the 6 home runs, sweeping away the Washington Nationals. Nolan McLean, obviously, the star of the night. The 8 innings of 4 hit shutout baseball, no walks, the strikeouts. I mean, just the complete complement of pitchers, keeping hitters off balance, a little bit old school, the emphasis when we're looking at, you know, the starting rotation. And you look at this Met team starting to find themselves. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it. Now, it's got to go out there and continue. They've got 29 games to go, I believe, in this MLB regular season, within 4 games now of the Philadelphia Phillies in the National League East. And you like the fact that Vientos has got a 10-game hitting streak. You like the fact, I mean, you look at the idea of Juan Soto, who we've spent a lot of time talking about Soto, year number one with the New York Mets. Well, think about this. I mean, since late July, I think July 29th, Juan Soto with the runners in scoring position is hitting .400. I mean, his OPS is north of .1100. I mean, and he was dreadful before that. It's not been your prototypical Juan Soto season, year number one. I think there comes a lot with signing for $765 million, obviously leaving the Yankees for the Mets. The pressure that comes along with the contract, the expectations that come along with the contract, and there was clearly an adjustment for Juan Soto. But, you know, he's starting to hit to the level that you expect Soto to be, because he is a generational offensive player. Not a true 5-tool player, but what he can do up the plate is, and we've seen it, whether it be Washington, San Diego, the Yankees are now here with the New York Mets. We've seen it where he's been able to be that caliber of hitter. But it'd be fascinating when you look at this Met team being as dangerous as they potentially be can be come October. And, you know, maybe the turning point to this season was not just the last 3 nights, because Philadelphia is clearly, when they step into Citi Field, you know, they're seeing ghosts, to steal a line from Sam Darnold in that game against the New England Patriots. But when you look at the statement the Mets made, you can look at the last 3 games, but you could also look at the life that McLean has brought to this Mets starting rotation. Now, it's got to have a trickle-down effect. You're going to need Manaea, Senga, Peterson, obviously. We're going to see Jonah Tong tomorrow night against the Miami Marlins. Looking forward to that after seeing, you know, his strikeout-to-walk ratio in AA, AAA, and his dominant stuff that we've seen down in the minor leagues. And people have compared him to kind of being a modern-day Tim Lincecum with the extension that he has in his delivery. Looking forward to seeing what he can provide, but there's no doubt the brilliance of McLean. I think it's real. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. The confidence he has on the mound, the pitches. You should be excited if you're a New York Met fan, and it has been a long summer. You know, as we wind down summer, you know, we hit the unofficial end to summer, which is Labor Day weekend, and football right around the corner. Big college football weekend upcoming. Ohio State and Texas on Saturday night. It's going to be a fun one with Arch Manning, the starting quarterback for Steve Sarkisian, the Texas Longhorns. But football right around the corner. It has been a long, you know, summer for the Mets and the Yankee fan. It really has been. You know, some disappointment, not exactly the summer where, you know, they've grabbed the bull by the horns, taken it and run with it. You've had to earn it as a fan this summer. And I get it. And listen, that's the long 162 game MLB regular season. And there were times you questioned whether or not this Met team was good enough. We saw the reinforcements by David Stearns at the MLB trade deadline, but we can look at a turning point, maybe being McLean being called up, inserted into the starting rotation. We'll see what Tong is like tomorrow night. But Vientos is a big-time key to lengthen out this lineup. Unquestionably, he is. And so when you see him starting to resemble the hitter that he did a year ago, at this time of the year, late August, soon September, 29 games to go in the regular season, you can think about what kind of impact that he can have. As far as the Yankees go, listen, they're playing good baseball. You know, they're beating bad baseball teams outside of, you know, the Nats. They sweep away Washington. You know, lost 3 of 4 against Boston. But it's kind of the same thing we've seen from this team in terms of, you know, when they face teams they should beat, they do it more often than not decisively. you know, and they hit six home runs and have games in which they put 11, 12, 13 runs. Well, the concerns you have with the Yankees, even in a wide-open American League, is, and the positives are going to be, you know, what you've gotten production-wise, power-wise, from guys like Grisham, year number one of Cody Bellinger. It'd be great to see Judge getting back. Giancarlo Stanton, this has been the best version of Stanton we've seen in a Yankee uniform. Positive that Max Fried, his last two starts, has resembled the way the pitcher that he was to begin the season when he was one of the best pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. Even a wide-open American League, the concerns you have is when the home runs go away, can the Yankees go out there and generate an offense? How stubborn are they going to be with Volpe at the shortstop position? And can this team go out there and play clean baseball consistently to get back to where they were a year ago, which is the World Series, and back to the Fall Classic, and this time potentially go out there and win it? You know, have I learned anything? Like, did I take anything massively away outside of Stanton? I mean, I think, no, I mean, Grisham's been a positive, and I don't think anyone expected him to have the kind of power production that he has had this season. Bellinger's been, you know, everything you could want year one as a New York Yankee. Stanton is the guy that I think he's got a lot of grief, has handled it well. He's got a lot of criticism in the city, sometimes rightfully so, sometimes justified, sometimes unjustified. I think what you've seen here from Stanton is the drive to win. And he's been arguably right there as one of the best hitters, if not the best hitter in Major League Baseball since he got off the IL. He's been remarkable. I mean, he's been utterly remarkable. And we know this about Stanton. When you get to October, he's going to hit. So what are you going to take away from the Yankees the next four games against the Chicago White Sox, who are 48-85 on the season? Not all that much. Expect them to win the series and not be all that surprised if they end up winning all four games. 110 on this Thursday afternoon. Mark Melusis with you. 888-808-1019. Have they given out the number for Jonah Tong yet, Puff?
They have. It is official. There is a number that Jonah Tong is wearing.
All right.
Do you want to guess what number it is?
Sure, why not? I like a good guessing game. Are you going to give me a range of numbers, or are you going to just...
1 like through 99.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, just start off with... Go start with the big numbers.
I just playing off the last segment. I'll go 67.
No, I was hoping you were going there, and no, it's not. How about this? We'll say higher or lower than 50.
All right, higher or lower than 50.
All right, it's lower.
Lower than 50. I'll say 43.
Lower.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the last three Mets to wear this number. How about that?
Okay, let me hear.
Travis Jankowski, Zach Short, Ben Gamel.
I'm not good.
If I give you another one, I the next guy after that, I think you're going to figure it out.
All right, well, okay. I don't know. Let's see. 24.
Close. Lower.
Lower. 23.
Close, but lower.
20.
No, well, that's Pete Alonso's
20. Pete Alonso's 20.
What close, but higher. How about that?
Oh, okay. So it's 21 or 22?
It's 21. It's the former Max 22 Scherzer.
Soto. 22 Soto.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm terrible with numbers. Yeah, there you go. I'm such an idiot.
Pete Alonso's 20, Soto's 22. Yeah,
no, yeah. I know. 21. There you go. 21. So he's got 21. That's a good number. Yeah, that's a good number.
You think that number will be retired anytime soon?
Oh, stop. Stop. let's head out to Belmore. It's Bobby. It's the fan. What's going on, Bobby?
All right, before I get to Tong, Moose, you know, Aaron Grant's kind of very arrogant. And for a guy that's got his defense got killed his last two playoff games, and, you know, I understand why he's upset because he doesn't have a quarterback, and, you know, he can't run the ball all game because this is the mid-70s before the Mel Blount rule. So, so I understand why he's upset. But let me get to Tong. You know, when McClain came, it lit a fire under Holmes' ass because he was pitching terrible for like eight starts. All of a sudden, when McClain came up, he was pitched very well the last couple of starts. And, you know, I don't think it's more than a coincidence that McClain lit a fire because he was going to be next to the bullpen. Now, with Tong, I think, you know, Manea, I call him Manua lately, same thing as Sandy, the way he had pitched. But, you know, he did pitch better his last couple of days ago when Tong was going to get called up. And I know he didn't go long, but he did pitch better. And maybe there's a lot of fire under Bolton now. Because if not, one of those two guys is going to the bullpen in long relief for the postseason. If Tong pitches like nearly what McClain has done. And maybe he could light a fire under these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone gets to a level. I don't know if you necessarily need someone to light a fire. I think maybe alleviate some of the pressure. The sorry rotation just was not good enough. It was not sustainable when you looked at the Mets. I've talked about the fact that I thought the Mets lineup was going to define this team this year. You couldn't have the starters barely going five innings and asking that bullpen to continuously take on that kind of work and not get gassed as the season goes along.
What could happen is this. If they're going to a six-man rotation because they have 16 consecutive days. But once they go back to a five-man rotation, if Tong pitches well, the two or three starts that he's going to get, and Manaea and Singh continue to fall. I know they've had injuries, so I'm not counting on them coming back. They're still coming back from injuries. But, you know, for the postseason, if Tong could get into the rotation and you put Holmes back in the bullpen, and then you could put a Manaea against the lefty team like the Dodgers. They play the Dodgers in the first round or the Padres. Then you could put Singer in against the righties, you know, with their right-handed lineup. And as a long hitter, and one of those guys is going to make the postseason roster for the first round. So, I mean, if Tong pitches near, I mean, the guy's been dodgy. Everyone knows he's been dominant in Double-A. You know, he's been striking out a lot of guys in Triple-A his last two starts. And, yeah, you're gonna, if he does pitch well and those two continue to fall, so you could see Peterson, McClain, Tong, as your postseason, you know, first round. I mean, I know I'm jumping the gun here, but
yeah, I mean, just a little bit. I mean, Bobby, we have not even seen Tong go out there and make his major league debut.
Well, if he does.
And yeah, I mean, right. I get he's looked. Yeah, no, I it can lengthen things out. There's no question. I mean, it can, and you know, you can find different ways. Listen, the Dodgers won a World Series last year, and they had games where they used openers and leaned into that bullpen. So, you know, there's different ways. There's you know, you could sense it. You get a feel what McClain has provided this Met fan base, which is a general sense of excitement, you know, and just, you know, hope, you know, because you were watching this starting rotation and you could look at it, the people criticizing Stearns not good enough, Montas signing disaster. Yeah, Holmes is good. He's not great. You know, concerned about the amount of innings he throws, doesn't throw enough strikes. The amount of work the bullpen's going to log, and McClain has changed that conversation. Now, listen, if you go out and if Tong is nearly, it's hard to think that in three starts, Jonah Tong is going to have a 0.89 ERA like Nolan McClain's been able to do for the New York Mets. But if he is nearly as dominant, then yeah, he's going to throw himself into the discourse and throw himself into the conversation in terms of being that guy come the Major League Baseball postseason and the playoffs. Rob in Smithtown's up next to the fan. What's going on, Robbie?
Hey, Moose, always awesome to hear you on the air.
Thanks, Rob. What's on your mind, bud?
Hey, not much. You were talking about Fields and the Jets before, and, you know, you were saying, like, how you can have all the talent in the world, but, you know, sometimes you just got to be a modern quarterback to succeed, and kind of just expand on that. What's going to happen if and when they fall behind? Like, he's going to have to throw, and you know teams are going to start the game plan where they're going to just try to get out to these fast starts on the Jets, and it'll be interesting to see when that happens and, you know, how much of a threshold or how much – you know, the coaches will be okay with kind of just sticking to the plan, sticking to the run game. At what point do you just abandon it and you're just going to have to throw? But, I mean, if he does, look out, because then this team's going to be awesome if he could do that.
Yeah, Rob, but what would lead you to believe that he can? Like, if you look at Justin Fields, I mean, his career completion percentage is 61%. His high-water touchdown throws in the season is 17 that he did in 15 games. Now, you know, he's also gone out there in 2022, and he ran for 1,100 yards and 9 touchdowns for the Chicago Bears. Now, is that necessarily sustainable when you're looking at the quarterback position? Okay, and, you know, and that was, you know, there were a lot of people in the National Football League that said, well, he combined that year for, you know, what was it, 25 touchdowns, I believe, on the season, you know, and had nearly 3,500 yards of total offense, and saying, well, Justin Fields has arrived. Well, I need a quarterback that's going to complete more than 60% of his passes.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think they're just hoping and praying, really, that him and Garrett Wilson.
Well, you listen to Mougie today, and Mougie's telling you that, well, you know, just like Baker Mayfield led the Browns to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's like, true. I think they're hoping it's going to be Ohio State all over again, and they're just hoping.
No, I get it, but like not like the comps are not it, like it's nauseating to a point. Like you can't compare him to Mayfield. Mayfield got in his own way at times with the Cleveland Browns. The concern with Baker Mayfield too was, you know, the size, you know, at times a little bit too much of the moxie that was unquestionably is about a leader, but you know, was it gonna be able to translate? But you know, Baker Mayfield had success with Cleveland, didn't end well. And then had him, found him, you know, and then landed down in Tampa, where it's a very pro quarterback, pro throwing quarterback system. Now they've gone through a number of different offensive coordinators. I mean, you step in and take an OC job down in Tampa, and you have success with Mayfield, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, you know, and that passing game. You're going to be in line to go out there and get a head coaching opportunity. I mean, two head coaches have gone out there and have become head coaches in the National Football League after being OCs down in Tampa. So we've seen it, right? So you put, you know, you're minimizing what Mayfield was in with the Cleveland Browns. So I, you know, we'll see. And Muji's being positive, spinning it positive. We've seen signs, we've seen growth, we've seen strength, better rhythm, all these things, all positives, all football cliches, all quarterback cliches. We'll find out exactly how it looks against the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I think it's got to look decidedly different than what we have seen. And it can't be necessarily you have to see it week one, but as this season does go along, because you've got to be able to throw the ball better than what Fields has shown him himself the ability to do so in the National Football League over the course of his first 4 years. You know, 3 in Chicago, 1 in Pittsburgh. You can't be that, throwing the football at the quarterback position and have sustained success. That's the issue you have.
Good job by those Mets punching back from a 3-0 deficit. And then obviously smoke in the Phils. That is a good tone setter. I still think the Phillies win the division. I don't know if I would put that in ink, because, you know, you win a couple of more and that you trim deeper into that deficit, things can change in a heartbeat. I don't think it really matters. As we've said many times, baseball's, it's just different. You know, it's just very different. You almost have to really, this is more of an off-season thing, but really look at how you address the team. And you know, it's almost not, on some level, it's not worth going all in so you're, you know, you've got that roster ready on opening day. The more prudent play is to have a good roster, you know, make sure you're in a position to be a playoff team, and then add those one or two big pieces, a big arm or a big bat, and, you know, as you have some more intel on the season. But, you know, we are here with 30 games to go. 30 games to go, great rivalry. You know, Senga, he's just not giving you any evidence that he could have been worse. He did battle through it, but I don't know how you trust him, and I don't know how you trust Manaea. I mean, one of those two guys has to join the party. Not both. And I said this yesterday. If one of them can just kind of get back to where they were, I think it changes a lot for the Mets, because, as we know, once you get to October, I mean, really, you know, you're not going to see static too much in October, unless the Mets are up 3-4-5 or down 3-4-5. You're just not. You know what arms you're going to see. You're going to see the high leverage quality arms. And if you get good starting pitching and you get a chance to truncate the game and turn it into that kind of a game, well, then things could change a lot for the Mets. I believe that. 888-808-1019 is the number. Joe's in Liberty, New York. BT and Sal on the Fan. What up, Joe?
What's up, BT? How are you, bud?
I'm good, Joe. How you doing today?
Living the dream.
Good.
Listen, I think I might have found out why. Well, I don't know if I did, but hear me out.
Yeah.
Storm and I are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
He is ripping first, second, third inning, 8 strikeouts, 7 strikeouts. Looks great.
Mm-hmm.
It almost looks like a closer, right?
I don't see that, but continue your thought. No, I don't think
so. Let me explain why. He's throwing 2 pitches, as Edwin Diaz does. He's 61% four-seam this year, 33% sweeper.
Okay.
That's his percentages.
Yep.
16-degree arm angle. He's throwing 1% sinker,
all right.
5% change.
I mean, Joe, I even love Joe. Joe, year. And I like this stuff, Joe, but a 1% arm angle, Joe. Come on, Joe.
Bob, let me explain what he did last year.
Go ahead.
Mainly the pitch selection. 61% four-seam, 33% sweeper. He's throwing 2 pitches. That's why in the fourth inning he's getting rocked.
Yep.
Last year it was 31% four-seam, 24% sinker, 18% sweeper, 11% changeup. He had more of a mix. They're sitting on his fastball or his sweeper. He's sitting on a sweeper. He's leaving in the middle of the plate. They're hitting it. That's why he's great first, second, third. and then the second time, third time through the batting order, they're ripping him up.
Yeah.
He needs to change that, in my opinion.
Okay, well, you better change it soon. I mean, last year, I'll throw numbers at you. I mean, you better change it now. Last year, he threw a slider 44.7% of the time. And this, like, you're right, 1% this year. I mean, that's, I don't know why the massive change. Honestly, maybe it's the loose bodies in his elbow that just don't allow him to get certain snap and certain torque. I mean, that's the most plausible explanation. You don't just abandon a good pitch for the hell of it. Eh, I'm going to mess around. Last year, those 18 starts when I changed my delivery, too easy. I've got to challenge myself, folks. So I'm going to ditch a pitch that's been very good, and I'm going to try to get everybody out. Major league hitters with two pitches. Now, listen, what you were saying is on point, and I love that stuff. You just get a little, when you start talking about angles, even lose me for a little bit. Sal would have been snoozing halfway through that call. But I get it. It makes a lot of sense. It makes baseball sense. I'm with you. Now, the other thing, too, about Manaea, and this is the thing that worries me a little bit. Like, let's just assume he's healthy. Because without that assumption, then anything I say is fairly meaningless. So I've got to take that leap of faith. He's out there. He's healthy. His velo's not down that much. Like, so he's healthy, all right? But some of you talk about Sean Manaea, you know, like he was like the Mets version of Ron Guidry. You know, I mean, I could come up with El Cid, but I'm looking for a body type, and just El Cid and Manaea. Then again, Manaea is a lot bigger than Guidry. That's not even a good one. Point is, I was looking for a New York lefty, and Guidry came to mind. Manaea, you know, he's okay. He had a couple of good years, but, you know, in 2023, he was not good. Big ERA. And there's just, like, I think there's got to be a bit of a recalibration what you think he is. Now, again, those 18 starts, when he changed literally who he was based on how he threw the baseball, arm angles, delivery, et cetera, slots. Well, okay, there's an element of deception that was involved in that. And you could deceive even the best hitters in the world for a little bit, but guess what? Those 18 starts are now on film. And guys go to school during the offseason. And it's less deception. And now it's pure stuff. And ball placement and repertoire. And he's abandoned a pitch. Last caller was right. So, I think he's okay. I think Manaea's going to be functional. I don't think he goes on a roll where it's 7, 8, 9 out of 11 starts where we're like, wow. Well, he's not even going to get that many with 30 games to go. I don't think he's going to rip off 4 out of 5 starts where he looks like a Cy Young pitcher like he did a year ago for half of his starts. I don't think that, I'm not saying you won't get one of those. I don't think you get that with consistency. And if you don't, which I don't anticipate, and I'm not counting on Senga waking up anytime soon, dancing around the strike zone, just throw a strike. You challenge somebody. I look up, I had to take my son to football practice yesterday, and I'm recording the games at home, but I'm following on the phone. I look up, it's the second inning. He's got 42 pitches in the second inning. And the crazy thing is, I wasn't surprised. I'm like, yep, that's pretty much Senga at this point. But if that's going to be the case with those two guys, that's what makes Vientos even more important. That's how I started the show. When Vientos bangs and he hits, there's a different energy, a different vibe, a different feel in the dugout, in the stands. He changes a lot. And he also masks some deficiencies. Not last night. Lower third was good. Torrens was really good. Taylor was good. But he masks deficiencies. So I think he is massive going down the stretch. Anthony's up in the Bronx. BT and Sound on the Fan. What up, Ant?
Hey, listen, do you have a case of amnesia?
No.
No, you sure?
I'm pretty sure. And if I may have forgotten that I had it.
Well, that would make sense. Because 3 weeks ago, you said if there was anybody the Mets should give up in a trade, mm-hmm. it's Mark Vientos.
Okay.
So now you're putting it on the fan base. I don't know any Mets fan who was ready to just trade him off.
I do.
The only person I heard say anything about trading him was you.
No,
3 weeks ago.
That's not true.
You said.
Ant, that's not true,
yes,
buddy.
It but, is.
Okay, have fun with it, Ant, but it's not true.
Go, hey.
Say it. No, Ant, I was the only one. Nobody else said.
What I'm saying is, no, nobody I knew. But
well, then you need to introduce yourself to more people. What do you have, one friend?
Okay, well, I'll just say this. You said 3 weeks ago, if there was anybody the Mets should trade, it would be Vientos. And it wasn't because you weren't killing him, but you said he was the guy. So to hear you say today Well, the Mets fans, many of them wanted him traded. No,
that's
you
true.
Did.
No, that's true.
It's you. Did you say it? Yes or no?
I honestly don't recall. I might have.
Oh, okay.
I'm not trying to run
so
away
you
from
have amnesia.
It. Well, no, okay.
So you have amnesia.
Anthony, stop. I mean, Ant.
I'm just wondering, because you do this a lot. You have this tendency to kind of put things out there that aren't true. Mm.
So I'm not allowed.
So now I just want you to recall it.
Yeah.
Either you have amnesia, or you just don't know what you're talking about.
Maybe that's it.
Or you just like to lie. I'm just not sure,
yes,
really.
Yeah, maybe I'm a pathological liar. That could be it. You might be on something.
Maybe. It sounds...
That could be it.
It could be.
It could
hey,
be.
Let's talk about the Jets and how... Tell us how great the Jets are going to be this year.
I have a better idea. Yep. How about you talk about the Jets with yourself? Go have a conversation with yourself. Go do some other stuff with yourself. Get lost. So I would say this about Mark Vientos, right? We all said that if you can get a really good player, you give him up. No, but you got to see, Anthony, Ant's the kind of guy. Well, we know what he is. But to me, it's okay to change opinions when circumstances change. The Mets weren't even playing him every day, dude. Beatty was playing more regularly, all right? They were giving that a shot. And when he was playing, he wasn't playing well. Now, if you want the entire Mark Vientos story, at least for me, go back and listen to what, at least, and Sal, too, on this show, what we said about him during October and during the offseason. If you remember, Anthony, I said that Vientos should bat second, Anthony, in front of Soto and behind Lindor. That's what I said to start the year because I was so impressed with his performance. He looked phenomenal. He was ripping it. But then he looked like he was an entitled, unserious baseball player to start the year. And I changed my opinion. Correct. That is true.